A Shishkin Productions podcast.
Hey, what's up, everyone? Welcome to another episode of the Sizzle Reel Podcast. We got a quick one because Caressi has to go do some grocery shopping,
That's more or less it. Yeah, I'm going... Camping.
Going on another vacation.
I'm going camping upstate.
The summer of vacations.
It's true. I mean, there's so much to do.
There's only nothing to do. It's true. Yeah. Chris,
I gotta get stuff for s'mores.
Before we start, what do you like to put in your s'mores?
Just the classics, graham crackers and marshmallows. And I don't like Hershey's chocolate though, so
you like a little bit of the Cadbury?
I would prefer, I don't know. Cadbury's kind of, isn't Cadbury s'mores owned by Hershey's in America or distributed? I don't know.
They put palm oil in the shit here. That's why it tastes like garbage.
Well, apparently Hershey's has like a specific chemical in it that is also a chemical present in puke. So a lot of people think Hershey's tastes like puke. I don't necessarily get that. There's better chocolate.
Now here they use a little bit of the old palm oil.
I really want to go to...
But across the pond, we use beans.
Hershey Park. That sounds like a lot of fun.
And toast. Chris, where can people find us?
We are at Sizzle Reel Gang on Twitter and Instagram. We are sizzlereelgang@gmail.com. Send us an email. We are sizzlereelgangthewebsite.com.
New and improved.
New and improved. Cool ass website.
It's a good ass website. I don't remember.
It doesn't matter.
We didn't buy either
we
one.
We didn't buy it.
Funds are low.
And most importantly,
yes,
you can call us.
You can.
At the Sizzle Reel Cold Line.
Oh my God, I'm freezing.
That is 332-333-4361.
Call in, text in, do whatever you need to do. Send us some burning questions you might have about, you know, post-production, about the strike.
Oh, yeah.
Other stuff we're not qualified to talk about. anything you want. Chris, I usually ask you about what you've been up to. I'm just going to tell you real quick what I've been up to, and then you can go.
Okay.
This week, I was doing a lot of social content creation.
Uh-huh.
We got a sister show called Calling All Casuals. It's about soccer. If you are a casual soccer fan or maybe you want to dip your toe in, it is a great show for you to start with.
Yep.
I've been making some TikTok content, and... It's pretty decent stuff. It's not bad.
I like it.
You made one this week too.
I did. Yeah.
What'd you think of the process of making them?
The process was pretty chill. It was pretty interesting because you showed me a new technique.
The Opus Pro?
No, not even the Opus. Just the process of eliminating.
Oh, the silence removal.
Exactly. Which I was aware that something like that existed. I just typically don't have a real use for it, but for these TikTok videos specifically, it's super useful to cut down something maybe about 30 seconds at a time, and it speeds everything up, and that's kind of how TikTok works, is like if you take too long, people are going to move on.
Right. Real quick, before you continue on editing that thing, I just drop in a tip, you know, an early tip. We don't really drop too many post-production tips anymore. So to do it this quickly in the show, it's a real treat to the Sizzlers.
To do it at all.
If you don't want to hear it, just fast forward 30 seconds. So the way it works, you take all your audio. What I like to do is nest that audio so that way there's no like cuts and stuff in it.
Yeah.
You nest it. You right click, you render and replace that. Yes. It renders the entire nest. And then from there, it'll be one long clip at that point. You right click on it and hit open in Adobe Audition, edit clip in Adobe Audition. And this is really where it comes in. Your clip is going to show up. You select it. You go to Effects Diagnostics. And there's one literally called Silence Remover or Remove Silence or something like that.
And you parentheses just, process.
Yeah. And then you just hit detect or scan or something, and it comes up, it just like scans within like under a second, scans it, tells you where all the silence is, and you just hit delete silence and it combines everything. It's so
then you save it
useful,
and
man.
Dynamic link updates it in Premiere. Yeah.
And
very quick.
We've been using it just with audio, but I wonder if that audio is part of a video, will it automatically condense the video with it if they're connected in the same like data in the same file. So something we should
find out. I would be surprised if Audition can communicate that back, but
I think what's going to happen on the next maybe one of the next projects I do that involves an interview, I might just run it through and see what it does.
Why not?
I would take the bit from the podcast, cut it down, make like a minute to 2 minute long clip, And then, you know, for the editing, you basically just, I don't know, put pictures that match it or whatever.
Right? Yeah, yeah. It's super simple. It took me probably like an hour and a half to do, only because I was unfamiliar
with the first
one
you did.
Yeah,
too.
And I was unfamiliar with the player and the story. Yeah. So I took some extra time finding the right clips.
From there, though, we put that shit through Opus.
Yes.
Which is a fucking scary hack of a program. We don't use it in the way that you could use it, but like, I think I've mentioned on the show before, it's like you literally can take up to 3 hours long of an interview and feed it through it, and it will automatically reframe, detect who's speaking, make captions, and on top of that, it will clip out moments that it thinks are like, quote unquote, the most viral or whatever.
Yeah.
It's fucking.
Yeah. So if spooky. You've ever seen a TikTok video that has like the kind of blockier letters, half or most of them are in one color, and then it'll randomly have like a yellow word here and there, that's probably been run through Opus.
Yeah. I forgot that they actually modeled that style after some influencer guy who like started using those kind of captions.
Oh, okay.
And the captions that using that style of captions is like his name style. I forget what his fucking name is.
Who cares?
But either way, if you want to see any of that content we've made, you know, Calling All Casuals on TikTok, Calling All Casuals on Instagram, you can find it there. And then I wrote film festival update in the rundown here. So update, we're into four, right?
Ooh.
We've been into four. We are not in to seven. We have officially not made it into seven because I was waiting on some things, but they all came in rejections. So nine to go. We'll see what happens.
Okay.
That's all I got.
We can. So you can expect to, you know, if the ratio holds up, get into two or three more.
Yeah. Yeah. Ideally, if we got into two or three more, I'd be overjoyed. I'm already stoked that we got into four, specifically the Minnesota one. So I'm as much shit as I talk about Minnesota. Crusso, you got a little something here on the rundown.
You
got a big milestone that you hit.
Yeah, I helped you move.
You helped me move.
No.
It was pretty good. We smoked a J on the back porch.
So
you actually have two big milestones coming up in this show, but let's just get to this first.
That's true. So the first one, this happened yesterday, from the day that we're recording. We have been trying to kind of figure out a way to film something a specific way, and we'll get into it more.
Yeah.
We talked about it before. We start with a GoPro. The GoPro was dead on arrival, did not work at all. So we had ordered it from B&H, and we were like, fuck it, let's just return this in person. And
it would stop rolling after like 3 or 5 seconds.
The longest clip I got was like a minute, and it would just shut down. So it could have been a faulty SD card, but it was a brand new SD card, and I think GoPro have had these issues before, and it was like, fuck it, we're not RMAing this, we're just returning it because B&H has a good return policy. So we decided to do it in person.
Yeah.
Had a little field trip to the city.
That's right.
And Alexi was not aware of this, but it was the first time I had ever been in B&H's flagship store.
Had no fucking idea. I just assumed, like, you're in New York, you work in the industry, you've probably been.
Well, the thing is, like, I've bought thousands of dollars worth of equipment from B&H over the last decade.
Mm-hmm.
But by the time I moved to New York, I wasn't really shooting anymore. I was just editing. And like the things that I buy as an editor, you can just get online. You don't really have to go see them in person and play with them.
Yeah.
But this was, we're looking for like an action camera basically that could be chest mounted and still be pretty discreet.
Yeah. Because with the GoPro, another reason that I was just like, let's just return it is because yes, it is small. But the problem is, you know, if you're mounting it to your chest, for example, you don't just slide it on and it doesn't sit flush with your chest. You have to attach a hinge type screw mechanism that attaches to another hinge or screw on the plastic on the chest.
Yep.
And it just sits like so far out of your chest.
Yeah, it starts to be really bulky.
And we're looking for something that's supposed to be very discreet to sit on your chest. Because kind of make like a little DIY kind of soccer video. Like I want to use it for Calling All Casuals. I just want to use it in general because it's nice to have a little POV of playing soccer, POV of whatever, you know?
Yeah. So we went to check out, you know, what was available for action cameras and just to see the actual form factor of them. And and the features and what might work for us. And we settled on two different ones that we decided to get, and we'll just return whichever doesn't make the cut.
Yeah.
We got a DJI Action 2.
DJI Action 2. And it's like a little block.
Yeah, it's actually really cool.
It fits in the palm of your hand. It's literally like a bouillon cube almost.
Yeah,
it's an ice cube or something.
It's pretty small. It's like a whiskey stone, you know?
Yeah, it's like a whiskey. It's about the size of like one of the big whiskey stones. That's a good way to put it. Yeah.
And it's kind of like modular. It has magnetic attachments. It's very interesting. It's like
the iPhone charging brick. It's probably just a little bit bigger than that.
Yeah, yeah.
It's quite small. It's really, really fucking impressive, honestly.
Yeah. We haven't really gotten a chance to test it too much.
The design looks amazing, though. But one thing I did notice, and the guy at B&A said this, but one thing I noticed when, you know, you actually told me is when you were charging, you were like, this thing gets really fucking hot.
It does.
If our goal is to, like, not only use it, but we're going to have to build, like, a chest strap for it. So then it's going to be right up near the person who's playing soccer, and they're going to be getting hot, and then things getting hot. It just seems like it might not be the best combination.
Yeah, and one cool thing about it, because it's magnetic, and both of them are like this, but it comes with, like, a pendant that you can wear around your neck.
Like a lanyard.
Yeah, and it has a little magnetic circle on it, and you can mount it that way. And if you put the necklace under your shirt and the camera over it, then it kind of stays in place. Like, we're probably going to need to, you know,
make a prototype
or something to...
Right.
To chest mount it, but it's pretty cool so far. The other one we purchased was an Insta360 Go 3, I believe.
something like that.
Something like
All
that.
All these things have, like, the same name almost. Yeah.
Now, that form factor is basically the size of a GoPro, but one really cool thing it does is the camera is this... It's like a pill.
Yeah. The lens is basically detachable, and that lens also houses, like, the camera guts. So... Yeah, when you say pill, I mean, it's about the size of, like, your pinky finger, maybe.
Yeah, yeah. Maybe a tiny bit wider, but it's not very large at all. It's the perfect form factor for what we're trying to do.
Big old sausage fingers.
Yeah.
Chode fingers, you know.
Oh, because of my nickname in high school.
Oh, big old chode fingers. Yeah. Not just chode fingers, a big old chode finger. B-O-C-F, bro.
Yeah. But that one is the most promising. The main issue is when it's not attached to the housing. I think it has a maximum record time of 45 minutes, and we're looking for closer to an hour. We'll have to run some real world tests and see what we get out of it. But it's really cool. And another issue that could come into play is the way it transmits back to the camera to record on the SD card.
Yeah.
It's through Bluetooth, and it has
limited range.
Like, if you're on one side of the pitch and your subject is on the other, I don't know how well it's going to record, and I don't know if there's any internal memory in that pill.
I have a feeling there's not.
Yeah.
So we got some hurdles to jump through. All in all, we might just end up returning both cameras.
It's possible.
Because, you know, if the easy solution existed, you know, it would be easy.
Yeah.
It's not. We're going to have to build our own thing.
It's true.
Part of the reason we want to do this is we were so inspired by doing these ref cam videos for MLS that we, like, enjoy the point of view stuff, and we're like, oh, this, imagine putting this, like, on, you know, like I said, on me or on Eric or someone playing a pickup soccer game, and that'd just be fun, you know, it'd be cool.
Or instead of just doing it once a year at MLS All-Star game, we could possibly do it in some regular matches. Or maybe
just even in training and something like that, you know, like just to get, like, a sense of like what it's like to be a professional soccer player.
Exactly.
So this ref cam thing was super inspiring. And guess what, Krussy?
What?
You did it.
Yeah.
You beat my ref cam video.
Oh, shit.
My ref cam video that I made myself with no help from anyone. Just did it on my own. I did it my way. Like old Blue Eyes.
Okay.
So
Frank Sinatra. Yeah.
I think so. It got 1.8 million, I think, views.
Yes.
Or 1.9 or something.
Over the course of 11 months.
And yours is a 2 million in 2 weeks.
Woo, boy.
You did it. Now, go ahead.
I'll caveat it. Alexi did the All-Star Game versus Liga MX, which, you know, it's a respected league, but it doesn't have the same pull as the English Premier League. And my cut featured Arsenal. And I think the name brand probably attracted some extra eyes.
Yeah, I mean, it's true. I believe so. I think you got that Arsenal bump. Now, the Premier League 4 weeks ago posted a mic'd up video, and they had a player wear the cam, and that one's only got 1.9 million. So yours is a better edit, I guess. But
that's for sure.
I can't believe that they've got a player wearing it. Like,
yeah, we
got
to figure out how they did that.
To be fair, it was a preseason game, so I don't think he'd ever.
Oh
wear
yeah,
a
it'd
real
be
one,
yeah, it'd be an exhibition of some sort.
It's kind of wild. But yeah, Chris, I mean, congratulations. That's insane. Hey,
That's probably the most viewed video I have now. I mean, I've done a couple of national broadcasts, but those are just commercials, you know?
Also, you know, those are not even viewed as much.
Yeah, yeah. It's like 30 seconds.
I value
seconds.
YouTube views way
yeah,
more.
Yeah, it's a 13-minute video. So if 2 million people sat through that, that's a pretty good feeling.
Yeah, that's good. How high do you think this thing's going to go?
I think it'll probably settle, I don't know, 2.5, maybe 3 at the most.
I got to go into 4.2.
Really? Wow.
Check it out. The one that I have.
4.20.
My highest viewed video, I think. You're going to.
Is it? It's a sneaker shopping?
No. Oh, it might actually be. I figured it's a Hot Ones. Hot Ones with Logic.
Oh.
12 million.
Yeah.
12 milli. Let's fucking go, boy.
Yeah. Well, I mean, Hot Ones just always does those numbers.
Yeah. Sneaker shopping. I don't think I've really got any giant guests. Like Usain Bolt, I think, is one I edited where he was, that's 4.2 million. I don't know. It's whatever. Point is, views don't fucking matter. I'm not a metrics guy. I don't really care about it. Crussy.
I care about getting paid.
Let's get into, we don't have that much stuff. We got three kind of little points to hit here. First one, I'm going to let you discuss this because you're the one who brought this to my attention. I don't even know if you said it on the show, but you definitely brought this to my attention at some point. That some of these solid state drives were wonky.
Yeah, so this started kind of popping up in the last couple months. I was mostly seeing it on r/editors, people complaining about the SanDisk Extremes SSDs, or
like the little dark blue ones with the little orange trim, and they got kind of that hole where you can like carabiner or a keyring or something.
Yeah, exactly. So the products affected are apparently SanDisk Extreme Portable 4 terabytes, Extreme Pro Portable 4, and then Pro 2, Pro 1, and the MyPassport 4 terabyte.
Which all are such a confusing batch of names.
But
basically, if you have a small SanDisk solid state, you should probably pay attention.
Exactly. So they have been basically failing at a pretty crazy rate recently. People are just losing all the data on their SSDs, and that's a huge issue for obvious reasons. And I have multiple of these. This is like, this was my preferred SSD for a little bit. So they just released some firmware updates that are supposed to fix it. And that's all this article on No Film School is about. Like, hey, go download this shit. It'll fix it.
However,
I have also been seeing, you know, through the rumor mill that this firmware update in some cases can also wipe your SanDisk SSD.
Not good at
yeah,
all.
So I've switched to the Sony's and the actually
Samsung.
Are the
Samsung have them?
Are the black ones that we
like
have
with the rubber casing kind
yeah.
of? I don't even remember. I feel like it's Samsung, but I could be okay. wrong. I don't know. I just got that one randomly because it was available.
Sure. So it's just something to look out for. I also learned, I don't know if I mentioned this on the show, but I learned that with SSDs, they're not quite like platter drives where you can kind of leave them for extended periods of time and they should boot up fine. SSDs need to be powered on every once in a while, just plugged in and powered on, so that they can retain their information. Otherwise, they're
prone
to lose it.
Do you know how frequently?
I don't.
I better plug in some of these Treefort dock drives.
Yeah, 100%.
Yeah, see, it's this kind of shit is what makes me like, I don't know. It's maybe, I'm not trying to be a Luddite or anything, but it's like, damn, this nothing is like, gonna stay. Like there, no. I don't know if you have a, like data is never safe. You know, no. you need to back it up in like all these different places. But even then, like data will be lost and like records will be lost.
There's no way to save everything. I mean, I guess best practice would be have it on your main drive, have it on an archive drive, and have it
offsite somewhere.
In a third place offsite or in the cloud.
Yeah.
The problem is cloud solutions are really expensive when you deal with like 100 terabytes of data, which is easily what we have at this point.
Yeah, for sure. If not more.
Yeah.
We definitely have more, I think. I don't know. It's weird because it's like, well, at what point are you expected, like how far are you expected to store things? I know we have this conversation a lot because we're like, damn, dude, we have like 6-year-old projects that like are, you know, we have a ton of footage in all these old projects from like 2018 or 2017.
Yeah.
It's like, at what point are we like, okay to just like wipe these? And really, I think the answer is never. Like technically, if you did work for a client, you should just have that shit backed up somewhere. And see, I know the chances of them needing it are slim, but like if it's not in your contract and it doesn't say like, hey, after 3 years, it's gone, you know, then well, you should try to maintain it if you can.
Yeah, for me, yeah, I kind of disagree. I think it should be in your contract. And I think that the standard practice should be 1 year. We'll keep it for 1 year backed up.
1 year?
Yeah.
If you disagree with that, call in 332-333-4361. How long should people hold on to
this? We're editors. We're not a storage service. Like, we can't hold on to your stuff forever. Like, I do think a year is a reasonable amount of time to ask for your data if you want to have it. If the client wants it for themselves, then they should ask for it. It should be, you know, they pay for the hard drive and we ship it to them and they can have it forever. I don't think that storing it permanently is the editor's job. I do think as a courtesy, you should do it a year. And if you have the money, you can do it for longer. But I mean, think about someone who's not a post-production company, you know, just a solo freelance editor. Mm-hmm. They can't have that many drives just lying around all time. Like,
yeah, but 1 year, that seems a little bit short. I feel like you got to like maybe three.
No, dude, no? Content becomes irrelevant so quickly. Like why?
Maybe it depends on what you're working on.
Sure.
Because if you're working on like weekly, like news things or something like that, then maybe I could see, you know, getting rid of it because it's not going to be relevant again. But like, say you need, well, if you need to do a sizzle reel, you just got to get all the cleans, I guess. But I don't know. Say you're doing something that's like a longer form piece that is like, you know, docu-style or something. And then maybe it's requested like 18 months later for, you know, hey, this company wants to purchase it and put it on VOD or whatever. So they need a new cut of it that has like breaks here, like two breaks put in for ads and you need to deliver it in three segments. And like, you know, you want to have that shit.
Then it needs to be in the contract. Like, I just don't think the onus is on. And I also think it's different if you're the production company. If you're the one shooting it, then yeah, you should probably have it for 3 to 5 years at least. But for the most part, the client shoots it or the client pays someone else to shoot it. And then we get the footage from them. Like, so why is it on us to store it? They already have the footage. We should keep the project files. We should keep the final exports for sure.
Fair enough.
But like keeping all that shit, it's so expensive. And like, you know, you can build it into the rate, but then people look at the rate and they're like, why is it so high? And it's like, well, cause we're storing it for 5 years.
Yeah.
But it's, and you're also just putting yourself in a bad position if anything does happen to the drives. Like because we back up like one physical and one cloud basically.
Right. Yeah.
But not everyone can afford to do that. And if you only have like, if you're a solo freelance editor and you have a single drive or, you know, a few drives, but you only keep it on a single drive, what happens if that drive fails?
The thing is though, hard drive space is so cheap now. Like if you're just a solo freelance editor, you can buy like, how much was that 12 terabyte drive that we just got?
Like, I don't know, $250.
$250. So you can spend $500. That's like less than 1 day of work and you can buy two 12 terabyte drives And from there, you're pretty set for like at least 6 months if you're like working consistently a lot. You know?
I mean, maybe
like you can make it happen. It's not that hard. It just like, you know, it obviously you're not going to want to work off of those things, but like you can store it. Like storage is cheap these days, you know?
Yeah. But I mean, you also have to consider a lot of these editors work in New York and LA. LA has a little bit more space, but New York, you don't necessarily have space to have 10 hard drives just sitting around in your apartment. Like no, shit adds up.
But 12 terabyte hard drives, you know what I mean?
Yeah. I mean,
how quickly are you going to fill up 12 terabytes? I guess it depends on what you work on.
Yeah, I mean, that's like really if you work with Complex, you could fill that up in 2 months. I'm not even kidding.
You're right. It took three projects.
It depends on the client and what they shoot in and how much they shoot. It can go really quickly. I mean, it was like a month ago, maybe 6 weeks ago, we cleared some space on our server and we were up to 7 terabytes. We're already down to 2. Like it took no time at all.
No, fair enough. You're right. I guess at the end of the day, it just depends on like what your contract says and what your specific role is. Like if, like you said, if you're the production company or if you're a company, you have a lot more microscope on you than like if you're just a random freelancer who was hired. Like people aren't going to be like, oh, this random fucking freelancer that we found lost the footage sounds really bad, but like this random freelancer we hired 18 months ago for one gig doesn't have the footage. That makes sense. It's not their responsibility.
And think about like a project that you worked on 6 years ago. Like right now it probably would, but you know, Adobe products, Premiere, it changes so frequently that by the time you open up a Premiere 2017 project on a Premiere 2023, it might not link up, or, you know, like it might be just different enough that what you're getting isn't really the original project. And going back and downloading those old versions is a pain in the ass.
Yeah. That's fuck that. I think what it comes down to for me is the last thing I'll say on it is at the very least, you know, obviously save the project. Save the final export and save a couple different versions of the clean, right? Whether that's like a split track audio clean, one with no graphics, save just the graphics on an alpha channel, just so that way, like
the clean should be kept.
If something happens and you need to go back into it, you can reassemble it using just the baked, like the fully baked export. So you don't have to reconnect all this footage.
Yeah. Well, and the editor should be keeping that for themselves anyway, for use in their reels or, you know, for their portfolio, whatever it is.
Yeah. Curious to see how, if anyone's, you know, got strong opinions on one, how long they keep their footage, two, kind of what they keep, if they keep it at all, 332-333-4361. Call in. Or you can send an email, but I prefer a call.
You can also text us, but
it's cooler to hear your voices. And remember, just don't store it on those sand disks. Stay dry. That's where I've been keeping all of our emails. That's why we don't get any. They're all gone. Chris, I went and saw Oppenheimer this week.
Yeah, I did not.
I kept roasting the shit out of it beforehand. Like just because you know,
Floppenheimer.
I kept calling it Floppenheimer, and I was just like, you know, I just like
just being a hater.
I like a bit of banter. I like to stir the pot.
Sure.
So I was, but Amy, producer Amy,
he's a contrarian to be a contrarian.
Oh hell yeah! Producer Amy had just seen it, and she was like, "No, it's so good." And
she was starting to get offended on its behalf.
I know, it was so great. I was just like prodding her and stuff, and then she's like, "Okay, you know what? Fuck it." And she bought tickets to go see it. She was like, I'm going to go see it with you. We're going to go see it. It's like, well, okay, fine. Now there's tickets. So let's go. Got out of that movie. And, you know, at that time, our executive producer of the show, Matt King, he was in Malaysia and it was morning time for him. And me and Amy, you know, got on the phone with him and we're just like, dude, you got to see this movie. It's fucking incredible.
Yeah.
I really loved it. I had a great time. I don't want to bury the lead or whatever they say, but I'm going to kind of let you know Matt King's opinion. He didn't think of it very highly.
Oh, he did see it?
I think he did see it. He gave it a 6 out of 10.
Yeah, but that's still above average.
IMDb, it's a good score, but Rotten Tomatoes, not very good.
No.
6 out of 10 from Matt King. Hard to impress, but even harder to impress, Logan Paul.
Dude,
Logan Paul walked out of Oppenheimer.
Why is this a a story, not just why is this a story? Why is this a story on Deadline? This is enough for me to never subscribe to Deadline that they think this is worth writing about. What the hell? He's a fucking YouTube star turned into a like boxer WWE idiot. Like what does look, no offense to WWE. Like I think that's entertaining, but I don't respect their film opinions.
I mean, I think
he also said he didn't like Interstellar. Like
the thing with him is, it reminds me of when old Dave Chappelle bit where they're like talking about Ja Rule. It's like 9/11
where
or something.
Where is Ja?
And they're like, we're gonna go to Ja Rule. I think
Wasn't that one of your first kinetic typographies?
Yeah, like when we had to do like kinetic typography projects in college, I did it with that. But with this Logan Paul thing, you know, the reason Deadline I think is writing about it is because there's nothing to fucking write about. I mean, everyone's on strike. Yeah. There's nothing going on. Like one of their stories on that's trending is Kevin Hart ends up in wheelchair after racing former NFL player in 40-yard dash. It's like, why is that even a story? But here's the thing. Logan Paul said Oppenheimer was all exposition and nothing happened. He said, I walked out of Oppenheimer. I didn't know what they were trying to do. What are you doing? Everyone's just talking. It's just an hour and a half, 90 minutes of talking, just talking, talking. Here's the thing, Logan.
It's
3 hours of just talking. but it's good. It's paced really well. It's like, I love a good talking movie, you know?
I'm trying to figure out what movie. There was a movie I disliked recently because it was just all talking. I don't think it's a new movie. I think it's an older movie that people really like. And I was just like, shut the fuck up, everyone. Just that, like,
not into it?
Yeah. Well, I mean, he obviously went into this with the wrong expectations. Mm-hmm. Like, he was trying to see an action movie. And it was... I haven't seen it, but
it's
I
like
assume
a cerebral
it's more
kind of
historic.
It really is like a courtroom drama in a lot of ways. It like it really has a huge like courtroom element to it, which upon seeing that, I had the exact opposite reaction of him, where I was afraid. I was like, God damn it, I hope this isn't some stupid fucking action movie. And like literally
movies.
When it started, I was like, okay, this is tight. I'm into this. I'm here for this. Because I was just hoping it wasn't going to be, I don't know, like, I didn't see Tenet, but, like, Tenet, the concept seemed cool. And then when I kind of saw, like, some of the scenes from it, I was like, just like, you know, I'm saying the concept in terms of, like, seeing those really early teaser trailers, it's like, ooh, this could be, like, wild and, like, out there, like, what's going on? And then, you know, as it got into more scenes from it was like a lot of just, you know, car chases and cars flipping over and shit. I was like, I don't want to watch this crap, dude. I really liked it. Unfortunately, because I wanted to, I was calling it Floppenheimer and all this.
You wanted to be a hater.
I wanted to be a hater. And I walked out of there and go, that was good stuff.
That's how I felt when I was 13 or 14. That's how I felt about Moulin Rouge. And then I watched it and it's one of my favorite movies.
Hey, you know what? Moulin Rouge is, today's Monday. It comes out today. A Feminine Features, another podcast in the family. They covered Moulin Rouge. So.
Oh, that's the episode I should have been on. That's the one.
Dude, if you want to listen to him talk about it, it's live right now as of us releasing this episode. So
this is only tangentially related because Moulin Rouge, I saw it on Broadway last year. Mm. They have a Back to the Future Broadway play now that I'm really excited to see.
That actually does sound pretty good. Chris, let's get into this last thing here. I'm going to let you intro it. It's called Cameraless Production.
Okay, so I just learned about this like 10 minutes before we got into the stew. But this is a new, I guess, form of production from Sony. They're calling it real-time cameraless production. And I guess it has something to do with the new Ghostbusters movie. Possibly they're going to shoot it this way. And I only kind of understand how it works. I believe that they are using Unreal Engine to make... I guess to shoot the scenes in real time or render them in real time, because they keep saying it's a cameraless production, which
It's a weird way to put it.
I think it's just a buzzy term because there are absolutely cameras being used.
I think they're trying to explain like that it's cameraless in the sense of there are no big cinema cameras on there. There's no real lenses. There's nothing. There are virtual cameras. That's what's being used. And then the devices that the people are holding and operating are basically just like little wands that have a few kind of almost meters or something sticking, a detector type things. I don't know. There's like little wands sticking off of it. And you just kind of point it. And I think it just it indicates where the camera would be.
Yeah.
So you still have to, you can probably program all that too if you want, but it's just so much easier to have someone holding something and walking around. They basically create like a, in this scene that they rendered out, it is the, what's it called? The Puff Man or whatever.
Stay Puff Marshmallow Man.
Yeah. Walking through a big city. Yes. And in this, they, instead of like, you know, creating a big city, they put a few PVC pipes in like a, in formation of like big blocks, like the main important blocks.
The Ghostbusters car is driving around and in real life, they're using an RC car.
Right. And then they have someone who's wearing like a mocap suit playing the role of the Marshmallow Man. So that Marshmallow Man walks by these PVC pipes, kind of turns and has a look. And the person who's the cam op is just a guy holding like this, almost like a selfie stick that he's pointing towards the guy walking around. And all this is being kind of not maybe rendered in real time. I don't know, but it's being shown in real time on a computer.
Yeah.
And so like the director is able to see what it would look like. And from there you can, you know, change all the settings. Like you can change the time of day. You can change the way where the position of the sun is. You can change like how shadows are hitting. You can change textures. It's like just like any fucking video game or anything you do in an Unreal or Blender or whatever. It's the thing. It doesn't look super sophisticated. It just looks like a fucking video game cutscene.
Yeah.
But I don't know. I guess I can see the promise of it.
It's so I think it's actually really interesting technology. I don't like the way it's being presented. And I don't know if that's from Sony themselves or if it's just No Film School, you know, kind of editorializing. But like it's very cool because to me, it's just your standard CGI that cuts out a ton of steps. But like looking at the brief behind the scenes they showed, which really doesn't show you anything, they're definitely in their keyframing shit. They're definitely using, like they're adding models somehow because like not every car that is on the streets is represented in real life. So I don't know exactly how they're doing that. I think it's going to speed up, you know, like CGI films, but it's still just CGI. Like it's just rendered in Unreal Engine as opposed to, you know, Nuke or I don't even know what they use anymore.
Right. I don't know. I think, I would not watch a movie that was all like that because I would if it's like a cartoon. I wouldn't because it really is just so video gamey and it's just like, I just don't want to watch video game cutscenes, though. You know, like they're not, the cutscenes aren't ever really fun to me. Grand Theft Auto is like the only place where they're kind of fun, but it's only because it gets you from action to action.
I've definitely played some video games where I enjoyed the cutscenes a lot because it moves the story along and you care about the characters and what's happening more.
But how much cooler is it to see like this shit done practically? You know what I mean? Like, you can replicate light and shadow and texture as much as you want, but at the end of the day, like it still is going to look animated.
Yeah,
it's so much cooler when it's like on film and real.
Yeah, you know? Practical film effects are always going to look cooler, in my opinion. But it's—I don't know. I think it's cool technology, like I said before. But it's just a proof of concept right now. Anyway, like I'm sure in 5 years, this will be an actual way to make movies. Like a pretty standard practice right now that seems a little bit more limited.
I think the technology is amazing though. That's what I will say. It is really cool and it allows for a lot of great flexibility and it's really interesting. Hopefully it doesn't look so crude in the future. I don't think it will.
Well, here's the other part of this is the only actual character we see is a giant cartoon marshmallow man, so like we have no idea how this would work with actual people.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know if the mocap artist speaks, do the lips move along with it, or is that it's just such a limited prototype right now that I need to see more before I believe in it. But it seems really interesting.
I think that it is the reason they did it on this is because it shows scale. And for them, I guess what they're trying to say is like, hey, look, we can show you this giant world at scale and it's massive. And that might be some of the hardest stuff to make.
Yeah.
Because if you're going to just film a scene of two people talking, just fucking.
Someone built that world. Someone built those models.
Right. Like, I know. It's like
it's still just CGI.
Yeah, exactly.
With fewer steps.
Exactly. It's like when you need to combine two things, like a pre-rendered CGI world with an actionable person in it or something like that.
Yeah, and I'm sure the animation will look a lot more fluid and natural than if it was, you know, just keyframed or rigged, I guess.
Yeah. I think it's cool. It'll get better. It's interesting. I really dread the time when I hope there's not this time, but if it comes, I dread it. The time when CGI is like every movie. I know that we're like, like that for the superhero movies, but I don't really watch those.
They've been saying that for a long time.
Yeah, I don't think it's ever gonna come. I think people like to see other people. People want to watch people acting. Like, that's what's fun about
absolutely
about theater and about movies and all that. Chris, you got anything else on this cameraless production or anything else before we start heading to the end of the show here?
I don't think so.
Nothing. All right, let's get into it. It's what we learned last week. What we learned
last week. You want me to start? Okay. I was in Canada last week.
Why don't you go ahead and kick us off?
All right.
I haven't done it in a while.
It's true. You haven't. I let my guard down.
I know. So
I was so disappointed.
It happens.
And while we were driving there, I crossed over the Mississippi.
Wow.
Not our Mississippi. So last year when we went to Minnesota for All-Star, I learned that that's where the Mississippi River ends. They have a different Mississippi River. They also have Kanata, Kanata. And that's actually that is the word that Canada is based off of. It's an indigenous word. I don't remember what it means.
Okay.
I also went to a powwow.
Dude, yeah, you did it all. I mean, you're having the summer of vacations. It's happening. True. You stayed in a mansion on the beach or something like that?
Mansion is generous, but it was, it's three stories. Like,
three stories?
Yeah.
Holy guacamole, man. You're fucking living the life, man. I learned that the first Dunkin' Donuts in Saudi Arabia was put there in 1986. I thought that was...
I guess 2008 when you asked me.
I know. It's weird. It's like, damn, Dunkin' was really out here. They put a Dunkin' Donuts in Saudi Arabia in 1986. They put a Dunkin' Donuts in Lebanon or something in like 98. They put one in Japan in like 1970 or some shit like that. So Dunkin' has been on that global grind for a minute. Global grind.
No, we thought it was just America that runs on Dunkin'.
Turns out it's the world, you know?
It's crazy.
And, you know, I'll add a little bonus fact. When they went to Spain, the term D-O-N-U-T, donut, like spelled that way, was already copyrighted in Spain by a different place. So when they went to Spain, right away, they just renamed it to Dunkin' Coffee, which makes no fucking sense at all.
What are you Dunkin'?
What are you? You're dunking the coffee into itself. What are you doing?
Maybe they're saying the coffee is for Dunkin'.
Yeah, I don't know what they're talking about, but it was a good little foreshadowing because now they're just called Dunkin'.
And it's true
because they're more known for their coffee than they are for their.
I almost
donuts.
Never get their donuts.
Donuts are mid.
They're fine.
I also don't really eat donuts.
I don't like donuts.
It's not good to eat donuts.
Yeah, but I'll go there for coffee, but also for their like breakfast foods. I actually really like their food.
Love their food. I go there for the coffee and the vibes.
Oh, it's all about the vibes.
Fucking vibes are insane, bro. One time I went in there in Providence, Rhode Island. It's a great place to go to Dunkin' Donuts.
That's true.
There was just a croissant or a bagel or something on fire in their little toaster. Just you drop the bagel and it goes through the conveyor belt.
Yeah.
There was the bagel stuck in the back of it, just on fire, smoke coming out. And I'm paying for the thing, and I was with my friend Brad, and Brad goes, guys, I think you got a, I think the bagel's on fire over there. And they look over there, yeah, this happens like all the time. It's like, no one did anything. I was like, what the fuck, bro? The Dunkin' vibes are real. All right, Krusty, let's get the fuck out of here. But before we do that, social plugs, right?
We are at Sizzle Reel Gang on Twitter and Instagram. We are sizzlereelgang@gmail.com. Send us an email. Give us your thoughts on Floppenheimer.
Yeah, tell us about Floppenheimer if you saw it.
And tell me how long we should be keeping our footage.
Yeah.
We are, what else are we? SizzleReelGangTheWebsite.com.
That's a classic.
Yeah, cool ass website, good ass website.
Really, the phone number is the most important thing, I think.
What's the phone number again?
Oh, the cold line phone number?
Oh, the cold line. Oh, yes. I think it's
332-333-4361.
Yeah, that sounds right.
Call in, text in. Like Krusty said, let us know, what'd you think of Floppenheimer? Were you part of the Logan Paul school of critique where you left after 10 minutes because it was people
talking? Punching the head too many times.
Were you, did you lose any footage in the SanDisk erasal of 2023?
I don't know. Erasure?
Erasal. Have you ever been to B&H? That kind of stuff. So yeah. Call in. We're trying to get more people involved in the show, and we figured the best place to do it is right at the last 30 seconds of the show. Thanks for listening. Thank you, Chris, for being here.
Yep.
Thank you, Matt King, for building the studio.
It's true.
See you later.
See you guys.
A Shishkin Productions podcast.